For those of you who have heard Michelle this morning, you know we're in for a real treat. She's really a trailblazer. I guess I have no other way to describe, really, to have, you know, she created something that's never happened before in the history of the Jewish people in 4,000 years, that to have a Siyum HaShas of 3,500 people to come in Binyanei HaOmah to celebrate woman learning. If you can think, the people who are my age and older, how impossible this would have been when we were growing up, to think of such a concept. I mentioned my mother, when she was 11 years old, was told, that's the end of the Jewish education, there's nothing more to learn for a woman. My mother, growing up in Toronto, they told me you have to marry a rabbi, which is what she did. But anyways, so it's really a totally different world, and there's been so much happening, and really, Michelle is the first woman in history to be teaching a Daf Yomi Shiur. She's a graduate of Yeshiva Flatbush. She studied in Midrash at Lindenbaum, went to Barnard, made Aliyah in the middle of Barnard, finished at Barnard University, and her and her husband are the head of a kibbutz in Ramana, and it's a pleasure to have her here and to share her inspiring words of Torah with us.
Hi, it's really an honor to be here. I want to thank our host. Thank you for having me. What we're going to do tonight is we're going to learn a regular Daf Yomi Shiur. What I want to show you is I titled the Shiur. You never know what you might find in the Daf. There's always surprising things and interesting. And someone brought it up today. Maybe you should warn people that it's going to get tough at a certain point. And some Daf Yomi are complicated. Deborah Steinmetz, Rabbi Silver, was here last week. His wife wrote a fabulous essay, you can look it up, on learning Daf Yomi, and she talks about how it's like a marriage. And there's good days, and there's complicated days, and it's not always easy riding, but you're there for the long term, and there's an appreciation of, you know, over the long term, there's a deep appreciation of the beautiful things that the Gemara has to offer. And even if sometimes it gets a little tough, it's there's a real good goal in getting to it. And one of the reasons, so I started teaching Daf Yomi 7.5 years ago, and when it became time a few years before the Siyum, myself and a bunch of women, we were discussing what are we going to do to celebrate, and we kind of said, you know, myself and the group of women that study with me, it's like this contagious love of learning. And you know, now this group, it was from the beginning, I put out my shiurim on the internet when I realized right away that there was no women's Daf Yomi on the internet. And since the majority of people learn Daf Yomi learn on the internet, so I put it up on the net. And I, you know, so I have women following me from back then and now. And we were trying to think about how to celebrate this amazing occasion together. And really, what we wanted to do is, I like to call it this contagious love of learning. And we wanted to share it with other people and make people realize that there's this amazing book out there called the Talmud. In fact, it's funny, I was telling someone the other day that I used to sit outside, my daughter went to a sports class, and I used to sit outside preparing my class, and a boy, it's a little boy who was going into the chug, you know, the class after her, he was waiting outside the door, and he looked at me, and I was near the end of one of the volumes of the Schottenstein, and he looked at me, and he said, "Are you almost finishing that book?" And I said, "Well, not really. Kind of got a long time to go. It's not like a regular book where it just finishes and that's the end of it." But really, it's this love of learning, and we wanted, a lot of women have never really studied Talmud and haven't really had access to it, and we wanted to kind of send the message that Talmud is relevant, it's accessible. I think a lot of people feel, oh, Talmud's up there, it's very theoretical, it's not relevant, and I want to show you in one shiur tonight, I hope I can convince you, if for those who aren't learning, and for those who are learning, you'll be able to get through the Daf, which is that the Gemara is very relevant. It's very accessible now because you can have podcasts and other things, and there's so much available on the web that can make it relevant and accessible. And the other thing that we really believe in is connecting women who are learning with each other. Because I think that with making connections and feeling connected to people in the community, it's one thing we're trying to do is for the Siyum of Bracha to get women together in different communities to meet up. And to meet up, maybe decide, oh, we're going to meet up once a week, or we're going to meet up once a month, or we're going to meet up every time there's a seal, and to get people to connect with each other around the world and to strengthen the learning, because it's a long haul, and it's helpful to have others learning with you that you can share ideas with. A lot of the women always say, I love learning. The doctor just gives me something to think about during the day. And when you have some other people to share it with, it makes it even more fun. So without more introduction, we're going to start. We're going to start at the beginning of the fourth line on Munala. Okay, for those who went to the earlier tier, I didn't finish up, we'll just have to bridge that small gap between last stop and this gap. Okay, Baal Mine Mirav Pista. They asked Rav Pista a question. Misha Chal V'Shata V'Lo Berech, Mao Shechzor V'Yavgalech. Okay, maybe I should give a little bit of an intro to those who aren't doing the daf. So we're in the context of the parak is all about Berkat HaMazon, benching after the meal, and Zimun. When people sit together and invite, for those who went to the shir earlier today, it was all about Zimun, who could be part of the Zimun, how do we count you. But now they're asking a separate question about brachot in general. Before you eat, you're supposed to make a blessing as a way of saying, okay, we thank God that he gave us the opportunity to have this food as a recognition that we're not the only ones who... it's not just because of us that we have food, but there's someone else operating behind the scenes, and that's God. So they now ask the question of Rav Pista. Misha achal v'shata v'lo berech. Let's say you ate and drank, and you forgot to make a bracha. Happens, right? It's pretty common. You might just forget. You blank out. Okay, this is another thing that's interesting about the Gemara. Just I'll add little tidbits here and there. The Gemara is very cognizant of the fact that we're humans, and we make mistakes, and there's tons and tons of cases where they talk about what if you made this mistake, what if you made that mistake. So let's say you start eating and you're drinking and you realize you didn't make a bracha. Can you go back and make a bracha? Is it too late? And this is why I entitled it Missed Opportunities. Is it too late to make a bracha? So instead of giving a yes or no answer, what does the Gemara do? They give a creative answer. Okay, they say it in an interesting way. Amar lehu, so he answers them. Misha achal shum v'recho nodeh. If somebody eats garlic and has bad breath, yachzor v'yachal shum acher kedei sheyei recho nodeh. Is he going to now eat more garlic and then his breath will smell even worse? Meaning, right, just because you mess something up once doesn't mean that you should mess it up again. So I ate. I forgot to make a bracha. So of course, I should make a bracha when I remember. I missed my chance. It doesn't mean I missed my chance entirely. But that's his answer. So now, here comes an interesting assumption from his answer. Amar Ravina, and this is just another thing, before I read it, I'll tell you, another thing about the Gemara is that when you read the Gemara, I always tell my students, you have to suspend what you know to be true, because the assumptions that we have about our lives and things we do and practice and common Jewish traditional practice, sometimes in the Gemara, it was not so obvious, and they had lots of other... There were lots of other suggestions out there and assumptions, and they kind of threw all sorts of options in the air. So they make this suggestion that I think you'll all think is quite strange, but just because we think it's strange, they obviously didn't think so. Ravina says, Hilka hafilu gamar sudato. If you're going to say that you can always fix it, basically what he says is, okay, so you started eating, and you forgot to make a bracha, so of course you should go make a bracha and then continue eating. But comes Ravina and he says, it sounds like what you're saying is even if you finished eating and you are done with your meal and you realize, oh, it didn't make a bracha, yachzor v'yivaleh. You can make a bracha now at the end of your meal. Seems a little odd, right? You eat bread and then you finish your meal and you say, baruch na Hashem l'chem l'chem, hamotzi lechem min ha'aretz. That would be a little odd. But Ravina says, well, if you're trying to say that you can always make things up, well, then why shouldn't you make a bracha after? And then he says, I'm going to prove it to you from a case about going to the mikvah. D'tanya, and here he's comparing a little bit apples and oranges, because a mitzvah, making a bracha on a mitzvah, like if you make a bracha on a lulav, that's not exactly the same category of blessings as making a blessing on food. Making a blessing on food is usually viewed as, well, before I eat it, I need to make a blessing so it allows me to eat the food. Because otherwise the food really belongs to God and I'm kind of asking permission from God. Whereas doing a mitzvah is saying, well, I'm doing a mitzvah and you make a blessing on it. It's not the same type of thing. But he compares it to a bracha of a mitzvah. Which bracha? Going to the mikvah. Now he's talking, there's a debate about what case is talking about. I'll go with Tosfos interpretation. If somebody converts, They go to the mikveh. Now, when do they make their blessing? Usually, okay, let's take lulav or, right, lulav, what do? We make the blessing, and then we shake the lulav, right? That's why we have the pitom upside down, because if you're holding it right side up, you already fulfilled the mitzvah, and then you haven't made your bracha. So we do it upside down, we say the bracha, and then we put it right side up, and then we fulfill our mitzvah. I'll give you an exception to the rule. Lighting candles on Friday night, right? How do we light candles? First, we light the candles, then we make the blessing. Why? Because you can't, once you make the blessing, you've accepted Shabbat, and you can't then light the candles, okay? Whereas, by the way, on Yantif, this is a common mistake. On Yantif, you're supposed to do it the reverse. Because on Yantif, you light. As long as there's a pre-lit candle, you can light. And it's actually, apropos, we're talking about women, knowledgeable women throughout history. So there's a commentary on the Torah called the Drisha, and he talks about his mother, and he praises his mother in his introduction to his book. It's a beautiful introduction. If you've never read it, you can open it up and see. It's on the Torah. And he talks about how my mother was a real Talmidat Chachama, and she was a teacher, and she taught women certain things. And one of the things he says is she taught them to correct the common mistake that they light candles in the wrong order on Yom Tov, and that they're supposed to make the bracha and then light the candles. And he praises his grandmother for how knowledgeable she was. Anyway, what do they bring the case of? Going to the mikveh. D'tanya, taval ba'alan. You go to the mikveh, you get up if you're a convert. Omer ba'aliyato baruch asher kudishanu mitzvata v'tzivanu al ha'tzulah. You make the bracha after you go to the mikveh. Why is that?
Because you weren't Jewish.
You're not Jewish before. So obviously you can't make a blessing until you're Jewish. So therefore, and by the way, this also, if you want to talk about relevant things, women going to the mikveh, there's a debate whether women make the bracha before they go to the, before they dunk, or after they dunk. And Ashkenazim have been like most people that they dunk once, and then they come out, and then they dunk again, okay? And the machloket is all about, since converts do it that way, should we have women do it the same way and just say all tefillot should be the same with the brachas after? Or do we say no, those two things are not comparable, and therefore women should make the bracha before they go? So there's a debate about it. Machloket Ashkenazim is Friday, what we do. Anyway, so he says like this. Since in tefillah you can make a bracha after you go to the mikveh, so likewise if you ate and forgot to make a bracha on your food, and then you realized, so you can make a bracha after. So that seems like a very strange thing to make a hamotzi at the very end of your meal. So the Gemara also thinks this is very strange and says, Belogi, it's not in fact true. Hatam, there, when it comes to mikveh, gavar lo chazeh, the person couldn't have made the bracha. But ha-ha-me-kar ha-ha-chazeh ho-il v'idchu idche. Says no. Because this is different. When you go to the mikvah, so you can't say the bracha before. That's what we just said. They're not Jewish. In this case, you could have said the bracha. You missed your chance. You forgot. Tafla. So we now have someone starts eating. He forgets to make a bracha, or she forgets to make a bracha. What do? If they're continuing to eat, then we want to say, well, you have bad breath. You're not going to make it right. You shouldn't make it worse. So, you should make a bracha. But if you've already finished eating, then the conclusion of the Gemara is too late. There's nothing you can do about it. You can't make up your missed opportunity. Okay, now the Gemara is going to go off on a very strange tangent, and it's going to go into all sorts of strange things, including, but it's going to start with nutritional advice. Okay, now we find this strange. Why would the Gemara start giving you nutritional advice? But the Gemara actually gives nutritional advice very often, because the rabbis view themselves as the people of knowledge of all areas, okay? And we're maybe even going to get into some psychology today, okay? And first, some nutritional advice. I'm not sure you want to take this nutritional advice, but right, but they're going to give you, and it's going to sound a little bit like today, where, you know, this one says, this is really good for you, and this one says, oh, no, that's really bad for you, right? The same thing went on then with different people saying different foods are good for you or different foods are bad for you. So in a sense, this might sound a little outdated, because the things, first of all, the foods they're talking about, I don't even know what they are, but also, I don't know that we'll believe in the same things they do, but the concept of different people disagreeing about different foods and whether they're good or bad for you is going to sound very common to you. So here goes. Tanu Rabbanan. Okay, this is a quote from a Braita. Asparagus kashelale. Okay, this isn't asparagus, by the way. It sounds like asparagus. It sounds very like asparagus. But what they're talking about is a drink that's made with wine. Okay, and it was, if you look at Rashi, he says, Kos shayu shotim b'chol boker, aliba reka Reikana Liberfua. They would drink it every morning on an empty stomach. This sounds exactly like, right? You open the medication and it has all the details of it. Right? So this is what you should eat every morning. This is a drink that people drank in the morning. Okay? It was based on either wine or beer. Okay? So there were some that were made with wine, some that were made with a beer base. So asparagus yafel alev v'tov la'inayim. Good for the heart, good for the eyes. The kol shekhen l'bnei me'ayim, and all the more so for your intestines. V'haragil bo yafel l'chol gufo, and if you do this every day, it's good for your body. V'hamishtakirimenu kashel l'chol gufo. But if you get drunk on it, meaning you drink too much, like any medication, if you overdose, right, it's bad for your whole body. So now the Gemara says, okay, this is a quote from a Braita. Okay, for people who aren't familiar with Gemara and Braita, so I'll explain to you. A Braita is, the Gemara was written, okay, we'll do a little chronology. From 0 to 200 is the time period of the Mishnah. So the Mishnah was written then, and there were lots of things that were also written, or most of them were actually recited orally. And the way the Gemara works is that from the year 200 to 500 are all these people called the Amoraim. And they're constantly quoting things. Oh, yeah, there's this Braita that I knew because people memorized them. And there were people even in charge of being the ones who brought the Braitas. They obviously had good memories, and they would memorize them, and they would bring. So the way the conversations work in the Gemara is somebody says something, and then someone says, oh, but there's a source from the previous time period that says this. And the way it works is that the rules are, if you said something, you're, let's say, in the time of the Gemara, and there's something from the earlier generation of the Mishnah time period that contradicts, well, then you're stuck. In other words, that always trumps the Amoraim who are talking. Okay, they're not allowed to contradict, but what happens? They're always contradicting. So there's rules of the game. The rules of the game are, well, if you contradict, if you bring some source that contradicts you, well, you can either try to re-explain it. You could say, I wasn't talking about that situation. It's talking about this situation. I was talking about this situation. Or there's all different types. Sometimes they say, oh, it's missing words, and this is really the way it should go. And it's easy to say that because if people were memorizing them, it's very common that people would make mistakes. Or they'll say, change this word, and that resolves it. And they're able to do that. Or, you know, this person said that, and that person said the opposite. Oh, flip the approaches. You got confused as to who said what. You know, and there's constantly, a lot of what they're doing is trying to figure out how to reconcile these sources with either what they know to be the truth, or what they think to be the truth, or what they see people doing. So now, they said that this asparagus drink is good for you, for the heart, for the eyes, and for your intestines, or your stomach. So now they say, mitikatami afel alev, michlal debachamras kinan. Okay, they knew that not all of the asparagus drinks were good for your heart. But they knew that the ones that were based on wine were good for the heart. So since they said it's good for the heart, it must be you're talking about wine-based drink. V'katane v'kol shekhen l'bnei me'ayim. And it says, and it's also good for your intestines. V'hatanya, but doesn't another braita say, l'la'at yafeh l'ramat kasheh. Okay, what's la'at and ramat? If you know Hebrew, you're not going to know what those words are either, because they're not Hebrew words. They're what we call rashei tevot. They're abbreviations for la'at is lev, Einayim, and tol is your spleen, and ramat is rosh, me'ayim, and forgetting, and rosh, me'ayim, and blanking. Okay, we'll get back to it. But anyway, the main point is that what? It says they're good for lot. What, did someone get it?
Taftonio.
All right, for hemorrhoids. Bad for hemorrhoids. Okay, thank you. So, exactly. There's a reason I forgot that. Okay. So, liramat kasheh. It means it's bad for the me'ayim. So how could you say it's good for the heart and good for the me'ayim if it says in the braita that it's actually bad for the me'ayim? So what do they say? Kitanya hayibim miyushan. Oh, the one that said it's bad for your inside must be talking about if you use old wine. Okay, but if you use new wine, then it's not. Kiditznan, how do we know this? There's a difference between old and new. Sorry, it's the opposite. The old, I can't remember, maybe I said it right. The old is what's good for you, and the new is what's bad for you. So now they say, how do we know there's a difference? Kiditznan, they bring a Mishnah from somewhere else. Again, they're always bringing in the early sources. Konam yain shani to'im, shayayin kashel l'bnei me'ayim. If I say, I'm swearing off of any wine, because it gives him bad stomach aches. Okay, this is Red Classic. My husband, he's like this. He never drinks any wine, it gives him stomach aches. Okay? So then they say to him, Amrulo, Vahalo Yoshanhu, Yafelim Neman. They say, well, you know, old wine is actually good for your stomach. Vishata. And if the reaction of the person was to be silent, now silence is usually understood, we say, Shtika Kamoda'a. Silence means you're agreeing. So basically, if we say to this person who said, I'm not going to drink any wine ever because it's bad for my stomach, and then you say, well, you know that old wine is good for your stomach, and the person's silent, what do we assume? That he actually isn't forbidden to eat the bad wine, the old wine, because he must have agreed that that's not part of what his vow was. So asur b'chadash u'mutar b'yash m'miyushan. So he's actually permitted to drink that kind of wine. He's only not permitted to drink the new one. Shema mina, from here you can see that miyushan must not be bad for the stomach, because that's the example they use in that mission. Tanu abana, shishan v'rein yamru b'asparagus. We're not finished with this asparagus. We're going to have a whole bunch more things about it. And shotin el shulchai. Okay, when you drink it, you have to use, this is like a recipe book. When you make the asparagus, the wine has to be not diluted. Most of their wine was diluted. The wine, we saw this in today's stuff, when we learned it earlier, that the wine, they would dilute it, and it wasn't really so usable before it's diluted. So again, for the asparagus, you'd have to, you would actually, right, it would specifically be drunk undiluted. Umale, and it would be a full cup. This is, again, drink a full cup of this, right? A little bit is not going to help you. You need a full cup for the medicinal effects. Mikablo b'yamin, now they get a little weird. You're supposed to accept it in your right hand. Vishoteu b'smol, but when you go to drink it, use your left hand, okay? It's not exactly clear why. And don't worry, it's not going to be the only thing we're not going to understand in today's stuff. There's a bunch like this, okay? They get even weirder. Ve'en misichin acharav, you're not allowed to talk after. I never saw this on a drug list. Okay, don't speak after. Ve'en mafsikim bo, you shouldn't. Right. You have to drink it all at once. Okay, like one gulp. Okay. Ve'en machzirin oto. This is a weird one. Ve'en machzirin oto el misha natnolo. You can only, when you put it down, if you return it to someone, you can only return it to the person who gave it to you. If anyone comes up with a good explanation for that, let me know. I have no idea. Virat acharav, you're supposed to spit after. Okay, if you have saliva in your mouth mixed with it, it's not good for you, so you have to spit out after. Ve'en sochim oto ela b'mino. If you're going to have something with it, if you're going to eat something with it, it has to be of the same type. Okay, sometimes I hear what that means. We're going to see soon. So now the Gemara says that they're going to question the last one. It says you're supposed to drink bread after. Now, none of these were made with bread, so it doesn't make any sense. We said you can only eat something that's of the same type. So now they're going to start their answer that they're going to have for the next three contradictions. We're using the sheets here. The sheets really help you organize. I made sheets to help you organize the flow of the Gemara. It's very helpful because sometimes it gets very confusing. So you can see here we're at the chart. It's like in the middle, toward the bottom of the first side. So we're now going to say, so what about Ein Somchim Ela B'Pat? Right, is that where we are? Yeah. Ein Somchim Ela B'Pat. So they say, Lo Kasha, Habidachamra, Habidishitra. Okay? There's a difference. When it says you have to eat it with its type, it's talking about, now I have to remember which one. Right. If it's made from wine, then you can eat bread after. And it's made from beer, then you can only eat. Now, beer was made sometimes from barley, sometimes from dates. So, let's say you made date beer, and that was what you made your asparagus, but then you would eat dates after. Okay? So that's how they resolve the contradiction. Then they say again, Tanechada lala yafel l'ramat kasher. One brayta says it's good for the lev, the ayin, the einayim, the tol, and the other one says it's bad for, right, the ramat, for the rosh, the me'ayin, and the tachtoniot. That's what we learned already. V'tani izak, there's a different brayta that says l'ramat yafel l'lat kasher. Okay? It has the exact opposite. Okay? So either you could say, now there's one way to answer this, which is, well, different opinions, right? Just like nowadays. When it comes to, you know, some people think this is really, you know, tofu is really good for you. Oh, no, other people say, eat tofu, it's really bad for you, right? There's all different opinions about all these foods. So maybe it's just a different opinion. But the Gemara has a different answer, which is lo kasha, habidachamra, habidashichra. Again, they're going to say, date beer is one, and wine, date asparagus is one, and wine asparagus is the other. Okay? Tanichada, again, they're going to say, one brayta says, rak acharav lokeh, you're going to get sick if you spit after. Tanichida, lo rak acharav lokeh, if you don't spit after, you're going to get sick. Okay, so again, it's self and the opposite. So again, lo kasha habad chamra habad shikra. So they keep breaking it down into, well, we're talking about different things. They might say the same name, asparagus. Asparagus means something else. Okay. Amar of Ashi. Hashtada amar lo rak acharav lokeh. Meimav nizrakin afilu b'fnei melech. He now says, well, not only is it so important that you spit after, that if you're in front of the king, and you had this asparagus drink, and right, you could even spit in front of the king. Saying that's how important it is. Okay, now we're moving on to a bunch of other strange things, and then soon we're going to get to a really interesting story. Amar Rabbi Yishmael ben Elisha, L'shad Barim Sachli Suriel Sar Hapnim. He now says that I was spoken to by an angel. Okay, and the angel told me a bunch of things. Al titol chalukha b'shachari miyad ha-shamash b'tilbah. Don't take your clothes in the morning from your servant and get dressed, but you should take your clothes yourself. It's a very strange thing, for an angel to be telling a human being, right? You know, they don't really need to be spoke to an angel, right? This is a way of telling you, this is something that's very important, okay? And this is something, maybe he's almost saying, something you might not exactly understand. And that might help us, because we don't really exactly understand this. What would be the significance of taking your clothes yourself? I actually thought maybe it has to do something with, you shouldn't have people do things for you all the time. You should do things yourself, right? Like your basic needs of getting your clothes, right? We always say in my house, don't ask someone to do something you could easily do yourself. So maybe that's the idea here. You know, to get your clothes in the morning is not very complicated to do. So I don't know if you say that in your house, but that's the rule at our house. Don't ask someone to do something you could easily do yourself. Okay. So that's the first. The second, al titol yadcha mimi shelo natal yadav. Don't have someone else wash your hands if they haven't washed their own hands. But that makes a lot of sense because the hands in the morning, they would wash their hands. They wanted to remove any sort of impurity on their hands. So you don't want someone whose hands are impure washing your hands. On the other hand, it doesn't make sense because you're washing your own hands and your hands are impure. So maybe it goes in the line of the previous one, which was you shouldn't ask someone to do something for you that you could do yourself. So maybe. Again, I couldn't find any really good explanations of these. They're complicated. Which is something to learn in Daf Yomi also. Like, you might come across things that don't make so much sense, and you have to learn to live with not always understanding everything. Which for me, I like to understand things. Not so easy, but... okay, next. Ba'al tamzir kos asparagus el lishanat nolecha. Again, this kos asparagus, right? Don't return it to the person who gave it to you. Yeah, except to the person who gave it to you. Mipnei, and now we start to get into spirits. Mipnei shetach sepit, because of this shade. Okay, they were shading, they believed in these evil spirits, because of the evil spirit. Ba'amrilan, some people say istaglanit shal malachei chavala, or maybe it's this group of angel, attack angels. Mitzapin lo la'adam, they're waiting. They're like praying on man, just waiting. Ba'omrim ematayah bo'adam lidei achav mitvarim elu v'yilakeh. They're kind of just waiting for you to do something wrong, and as soon as you do something wrong, they'll come and get you. This sounds very odd. This doesn't sound like our religion. Doesn't sound right. How do we relate to this? So first of all, this talk of evil spirits, there's two approaches to them. One is to say that there really is something called evil spirits, and it's real, and it's, you know, there's something going on there. I always prefer the rationalist approach, which is that what they're trying to say is avoid certain things because, you know, something bad might happen to you, but not that there's really evil spirits. And a lot of it, I think, has to do with psychological, you know, that a lot of the evil spirits they talk about are your own psychology, your fear of things, and that if you do things wrong, then you're scared that something's going to kind of attack you. Here again, it's a little bit of a weird use of it. Okay, we're not done with the angels. Amar Rav Shlomo ben Levi. Shloshat, so now we have someone else who says, Shloshat v'arim sachli malach ha'mavet. The malach ha'mavet told me three things. Al titol chalukha shacharit miyad ha'shamash, same thing, v'tilbash. Va'al titol yadcham yivishalom natal yadav, same thing. Third thing, by the way, one thing I noticed, I don't know what to make of it, both are talking about litol. One is litol yadayim, to wash your hands, and one is litol, to pick up your shirt, you know, to take your clothes. So, again, it's the same word. It doesn't mean the same thing in each context. I don't know if there's a connection.
And then he says a different thing, which might bother some of the women in the room, but we'll talk about it. When people are coming back from a funeral, don't stand in front of the women. Here comes the angel to tell Rabbi Yehoshua ben Levi, I am hanging out right outside the cemetery. My sword is in my hand. And I have permission. Okay, that's a moment where I have permission to kill whoever I want. Okay, and therefore, you know, watch what you're doing. If the women are coming out, don't start up with the women on the way out of a funeral home. Now, first of all, it's good advice for anybody, right? It's not exactly the appropriate place to start up with a woman. But it's a little bit of a, you know, the way they're perceiving the women, right? But anyway, then they say, what's interesting about this, now normally, there's always this concern that people say in religion, you know, the women have to cover themselves up because of their men, and people complain about things like this. This actually has something interesting approach. It doesn't say the women should go hide so that the man won't get into trouble, but it tells the man, how should you handle this? It says, v'ipaga maitakante, if you happen to, you know, get involved with, you see these women coming out of the cemetery, what should you do? Lynch of miduchte arba amot. You should jump back four amot. Okay, go like this. V'ii kanara. If there's a river, so liabre, go across the river. Get as far away as you can. V'ii kadarka achrina. And if there's some other way you can walk, well, lezoba, go that way. V'ii kagude. If you can't do any of those, well, if there's a wall, leku achora, go behind the wall. V'ii lo. And if there's none of these are options, well, liadar ape, turn around. Vilema, and say the words, Vayomer Hashem la Satan, Yikar Hashem Becha, etc. Ad Chalfe Mina. You should say, please God, shoot the Satan, and you know, you should help me shoot arrows at the Satan, like, help me get over my issue. Now, by the way, I actually think that this is not really talking about women. They're using women as an example, but I think what they're saying is, if you ever have any sort of temptation or any sort of issue, you know, these are tactics you can do. And it's really kind of coaching someone psychologically. What do? So, you know, if you have some issue, well, distance yourself from it. Try to go as far away. Try to do anything you can to control yourself. And it's very much focused. What I liked about it is in terms of the woman thing, if you are looking at the woman thing, well, it's telling the man, it's your issue, not, right? Some people complain, I don't know why it's the woman, but it's really your issue. Figure out how to deal with it. But again, I think it could be relating to other issues in general, and just using the women as an example. Okay, next. Amar Rabbi Zera. Amar Rabbi Avau, v'amar lev manita tani. Okay, now since we were talking about Rakana Mazon, one thing they would do when they would bench, we're now moving topics, although we're still a little bit in this kind of weird world, where today's just an interesting daf in terms of just relating to all sorts of other things. There's what's called a koshal bracha. When people would bench, they would use a cup of wine. They would bench in a cup of wine. People do that nowadays. Sometimes when people do it, especially like Sheva bracha. So they're going to say 10 laws about a koshal bracha. Asarat harim yamru b'koshal bracha. One. Okay, this big chart on the second side. Ta'un hadacha, it needs washing. Ushtifa, it needs washing. Okay, we're going to have to figure out what's the difference between hadacha and shtifa. The Gemara is going to get into that soon. Chai, it needs to be not diluted. This is a little strange. Why should it be not diluted? Umale and full. Itur v'ituf, which we're going to have to explain what those are in the Gemara. It means like decorated and wrapped. Okay, it's not so clear how a cup is decorated and wrapped. Notlo b'shtei adav, you hold it in two hands. Here we get again to the hands. V'notno v'yamin, and you put it in your right. Umagbihom and akar katefach, and you lift it up. A tefach from the ground or from the table. This we know. When you make kiddush, right, people lift up the cup. That's where it comes from. Okay, so these are the 10 things. The 10th is binotene nabo. You should look at the cup. Some people do this when they're doing kiddush or hadalah. They look at the cup. V'yesh orim, okay, this is going to get us onto our interesting story. Af b'shagro b'matana l'anshei beito. You should, some people say, okay, that those were 10, now there's an 11th. You should give it as a gift, okay? Or give it to drink for your wife, okay? And Shebeto really means your wife. The people of your house, what we're going to see, that it really means your wife. Meaning, this is what people say, it's a school of a drink from the Koshal Bracha. Okay, like if you go to a Sheva Bracha, people like to drink from the wine. Okay, and they say you should give it to your wife, okay? Okay, next. Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Anu Ein Lanu Ela Arba about this kol shel mincha. He says hadacha, shtifa, chayim ale. Just those four. Okay, we're gonna do a quick explanation of what all these are, and then I want to get to the story, which is a little more interesting. Tana hadacha mibipnim, shtifa mibachutz. Hadacha is the outside of the cup, shtifa is the inside. I'm Rabbi Yochanan, kolam avarech al kos male, notim ol achala b'lim etzarim. If you drink on a full cup, right, this is why we always fill up our cups at the top, you'll end up with land without boundaries. You'll end up with a lot of land. How do we know this? Shneamar male berkat Hashem, yam v'davom yarasha. If you fill the bracha of Hashem, meaning they say this is a reference to the cup, then you'll get land, yam v'davom, meaning in all directions. Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Chanina, where zocheb and ochel shnei olamim. You're going to end up with nachala in this world and the world to come. Ha'olam hazeh ve'olam haba. Itor, what's itor? Rabbi Yudam atzayim v'talmidim. It means decorate your cup with lots of students. You should make sure when you make a kosher bracha, you have lots of people around. Okay, that's one approach. Rabbi Yehuda, Rav Chista ma'atir le binatle. He decorated it with a lot of cups. Okay, you put all these cups around your cup. It's almost like you have a cup in the center, and then all these other cups full of wine. It reminds me a little of the koshel aliyah, like you pour it, but it doesn't really have a purpose. It's just there for decorative purposes. Okay. Amar Rabbi Hanan, ubechai. Amar Rav Sheshet, ubebrechat ha'aretz. Okay, so now there's different ways of understanding this. Some people say you shouldn't say the words Amar Rabbi Hanan, and it's really coming to explain this chai. How could you say that a koshel bracha has to be undiluted? Didn't we say that undiluted wine was not drinkable? So they say, Amar Rav Sheshet, ubebrechat ha'aretz. One of the explanations of how to read this means that it should be undiluted until you get to the bracha of al ha'aretz v'al ha'mazon, and then you dilute it. Because there's something about having that very concentrated shows like more wine, and then you dilute it in the bracha later. Again, it's a bit of a strange halacha to totally understand. Ituf, what's ituf? Rav Papa ma'atev v'yativ. But this is where we get the minhag that people put on a jacket when they bench. It comes from here. Okay, some people are makbid, put a hat on. That also comes from here. Okay, so what's itu for a couple would use like a jacket. The yativer of asi paris sudra al reshe. You put a hat on his head. Okay, this is where the source comes from. No tlobashte adav, amraf chidin abrakapa, maikra. Where do they get the pasuk from? Se'u yedechen kodesh. Lift your hands up. So that means you have to take the cup in both hands. So here they're not going to explain why, but they're going to question on it. What if you want to use, does it have to be only your right? What if, right, this classic Gemara, he says right, does it mean only right? What if you use your left and your right? Is that okay? So they say, and here's a good, interesting answer. People ask this question, nobody answered them. On a navigable tomo, we're better off just not doing that. Okay, we don't know the answer, but better off. Umagbihovna karkatefa. I'm Rabbi Acha, Rabbi Kanina. My crowd, that's the pasuk. Kos shuot desal b'shem Hashem yikra. Again, kos shuot desal. We did this in Havdalah tonight, and I was at Havdalah, right? Ellie picked up the cup. Kos shuot desal. I saw him lift it. It comes exactly from here. There you have it. Okay, we lift it up. V'notei na'avo. Why do you look at the cup? What's the point of that? You have to be focused on it. So focus on it. Okay, now we're getting to our story. What's the reason why you give it to your wife? So that your wife, it's interesting, the word for wife in the Gemara is debitu. Debitu comes from your house. The wife is the home. Okay, Renee has a lot to say about that. Right? The wife is really the basis of the home. And we were just talking about it today, that's why I said it. And the idea here of blessing, that the woman should be blessed, the idea is children. That's the concept, that she have children. So now comes a really famous story and a bit of a disturbing story, or a complicated story. Ula ikla lebei Rav Nachman. Ula got to the house of Rav Nachman. Now Rav Nachman, to give a little history, he was married to Yalta. Who was Yalta? She was the daughter of the Resh Galuta, of the Exilar. She had a lot of, she was a prominent woman, and she was also knowledgeable, okay, which was rare in those days. So he says, so what happens? So Ula came to Rav Nachman's house, Karich Rivta, they broke bread, Baruch Birka Mazona, they said Birka Mazon, Yad Le Kasa de Birka Tala Rav Nachman. So Ula made the bracha on Birka Mazon, and on a cup of wine, and he gave the cup of wine to Rav Nachman to drink. So what does Rav Nachman do? He knew his wife. He said, Amar le'Rav Nachman, li shadar mar kasa de birchata liyalta. Go give the cup to my wife. Let her drink some. Amar le, Ula says, why do I need to give it to your wife? Amar le'hachi amar Rabbi Yochanan. Rabbi Yochanan says, the assumption was what? I'm giving it to your wife because if I give it to your wife, she'll be blessed with children, right? Give it to my wife so she's blessed with children. Here comes the really big insult. He says, and I'm Rabbi Yochanan, ein pri bitzna shel isha mitvarech, ela mi pri bitzno shel ish. Okay. First of all, you have to understand a few things here. What is pri beten? It's funny because my sixth grader was doing some homework the other day. It was all about phrases in Hebrew, and because it was Tu Bishvat, so everything was phrases, you know, idioms in Hebrew, expressions that come from trees and fruits and all that. So one was pri beten. What's pri beten? It means your children. Why is it your children? Because it's the fruits of your stomach, okay? Which means, whose stomach is it?
Woman's.
Well, the wife's, obviously. So what does he say? Oh, no. The blessing, and he uses the term pre-beten, which is a reference to the woman's womb. He says, no. The pre-beten is mitbaret, right? The children of the woman is only blessed from the pre-bitzno shel ish. It's all from the man. I don't need to give your wife to drink because the blessing isn't coming from her. The blessing is coming from you. How does he know this? Shenemar, in Sefer Dvarim, it says, when there's the blessings and the curses, it says, Ubarech pribit necha. Pribit necha, if anyone knows grammar, right, it's masculine. Pribit nalo nemar, it doesn't say her beten, ela pribit necha. Now you can imagine Yalti hearing this, probably from the kitchen, you know, was hearing what was going on. It says, that is, right, if you're a woman and you hear something like that, oh, the blessing of the children is all about the womb of the man, and you're thinking, what are you talking about? I carried the children, right? That's me. She was very, very, very upset. So upset that what does she do? So before we get to that, they just tell you that, by the way, it's not just that Rabbi Yochanan said this, but there's also a Braita that says this. Tanya Nami Hafi, Rabbi Natan, Omer Minayin She'im B'Pribit Nasha Lisham B'Barech Elam B'Pribit Nosha Ish. Just quoting the exact same thing, Shneemar Pribit Barer Pribit Necha, Pribit Nalo Neemar Ela Pribit Necha. Adahachi Shama Yalta. In the meantime, Yalta hears this. Kama Bezira, she gets up in anger. Ve'altala Bechamra, she goes to the wine cellar. Vitavra Arba Mea Dane Dechamra, she breaks 400 barrels of wine. Okay? Wow. That is, so first of all, Talmudic story is 400 is like the most exaggerated number is 400, okay? Now, she goes to the wine cellar, she breaks it. You can imagine, first of all, the commotion, the noise of breaking 400 barrels of wine, and the mess, and the, right? And for those who learned the daf earlier today, it was all about not wasting food. I mean, forget about that, right? All that wine wasted, she made a really big stink. Well, let's see what happens. So, Amar le Rav Nachman, now this is, right, clear relationship, husband and wife. So Rav Nachman says, I better get Ula to, you know, make this up to her. So Amar le Rav Nachman, he says to Ula, Nishadr le mar kasa achrina. Maybe you should bring her a different cup. Shalachla, so now he sends to her a new cup. And what does he say to her? Kol hai navga de birchatahi. Says, all the, since the, okay, goes like this. There was a barrel. He took the first cup of wine from the barrel, made a bracha, and if that wine was blessed, that was the wine she wanted. But that wine is no more. So he can't give her that wine. So what does he say to her? Well, that wine came from this barrel. I don't know how she didn't break the barrel, but there must have been more barrels. And he says, well, if the kos that I had before it was blessed came from that barrel, then it must be that the barrel itself is also blessed. So here I'm giving you from the barrel, and it's blessed. That's what he says to her. Convinced or not convinced? Do you think it's true or not? Not really. So what does she say to him? Shalchale mi mahaduri mile umi smartute kalme. Okay, I don't think anyone really necessarily understands what that means. Maybe we do. Okay, what does that mean? Mahaduri mile. You want to explain?
From people who are peddlers around, gossip comes out a lot.
And their words are meaningless. Their words are meaningless.
So she's calling Ula someone who's really a peddler, who's below what your words are, don't really have any sense.
Have
to
any
them.
Meaning, okay? Right. And they're like, the second part of the sentence is, they're like clothes, smart team, right? We know it's smart team, right. They're like schmata. Right. You know, they're full of lice. Now, why did you call him a peddler? Because Ula was someone who traveled all the time from Israel to Babylonia. That was like, there were people who did that. He was one of them. So she says, you're a peddler and you're full of meaningless words. Okay. What's going on in this story? Okay,
obviously,
we're gonna...
she didn't think they were meaningless. She got very angry about it. She thought it was meaningless.
No, she got angry about his actions. But then she said, your words are meaningless. So what's going on in this story? We're going to stop here for learning the daf today. I've gotten you through most of the daf. Okay, anyone who wants to finish, they can finish it up. You can listen to the podcast on the rest. But I want to talk about this story, because the story is really interesting. So first of all, my husband made a joke. He says, you know, it's usually like the rabbis in the shtetl, like we talk Torah. So I called up a friend of mine who I know is a scholar and likes to analyze stories, Penina Neuwirth, if you know her, Rabbanit Penina Neuwirth. She's a fabulous Talmidat Chachama. So I called her up and I said, you know, I know you, I once remember hearing her talk about the story. So I know you talked about the story. What did you say about it? Because I'm teaching it, and I want to hear what you have to say. So she said, I couldn't remember. So she said that what she talks about is there's another sugya with Yalta and her husband, and it's a discussion between them, and she says she wants to eat this food, and it's a food, it's like the breast of an animal that has milk in it. It's like a part that's kind of meat, but it has the breast milk in it, so it's milk. And she basically goes into this discussion, and she says, for everything that God forbade, he matured something. So, well, God forbade something, he allowed something else. And she gives all these examples. I think I have it here, but she gives all these examples about things that, you know, so like there, that was the example. Basar b'chalav is not permitted, but this type of food is. She says blood. You're not allowed to eat blood, but we can eat the liver, which is full of blood. So she says for everything. So Penina's the whole chidush was that what's Yalta all about? That we make these generalizations. We like to say things are all usur, but she was trying to say, even though you think those things are forbidden, there's exceptions to the rule. Not everybody fits the categorization. And it's all against categorizing people into putting them in a box. And what she's saying to Ula is, you think I'm like all the other women of our time, and you're treating me with a lot of lack of respect, but I'm not like those women, and I'm different. And I'm deserving of the respect that you should be giving me. And she was trying to say, and that's why, what did she say to him? You're a peddler, right? And you're full of meaningless words. What she really meant was, you're not full of meaningless words. She was trying to say, peddlers are generally full of meaningless words. They gossip around, and they're bad people. And you're a peddler, and you're clearly not, because you're a Talmid Chacham. So don't try to categorize me as some way. But really, right, so that's her chidush. That's her way of reading the story, which is an interesting reading. And she's trying to say, right, and then again, what according to that, what's this, the Gemara is teaching you lessons in life. Don't, right, this is a very important lesson, very relevant to nowadays, which is don't put people in a box, don't assume because they look a particular way, that's the way they are. That's a great shot of the story. I had a bit of a different way of reading it. I thought that what was going on here is, he says to her, what's the whole thing? Again, I go back to thinking about how she felt when he said, the child has nothing to do with you, right? In other words, he's basically saying, you're irrelevant when it comes to the blessing of this child. But what does she say? She says, he says, the cup that I took from this barrel must, if the cup is blessed, then the barrel must be blessed. And it's just the same image as the mother and the baby, right? And she says to him, you're full of it, you know, you're not, that's not true. Because if you really believe that, then you wouldn't say what you said about the pre-Betan. Because she's saying that you would, right, it's the exact same image of if it's coming from the barrel, then and it must be blessed from the barrel, well then the baby who comes from the woman, and then she was basically saying, you're trying to make me feel better, but I know you don't believe what you're saying. And that's what she says to him. And she says, if you really believed what you were saying, then you would have given me the kosher bracha because the blessing for the child comes from me, just like the wine that's blessed comes from the barrel, which was its source. So she's trying to say to him that you're obviously not, you know, you're just trying to make me feel better, but it's not real. You don't really believe it. Anyway, it's interesting to see the Gemara talk about this woman Yalta. You wonder if the Gemara viewed her positively or not, right? It's tough to say. Because she's viewed as this woman who breaks these barrels. There's all these stories in the Gemara about women, and they're often screaming or doing. And I wonder if it's because they had no other way to be hurt. Like it was a struggle. You have this intelligent woman. You know, whether you might shot or penis shot, they're both
showing this woman who's struggling, who's not getting recognition for her importance. You know, she was both a prominent woman and she was knowledgeable, which gave her a lot of clout in that world. But it wasn't helping her because he was looking at her as a woman. And she had to make herself seen in some way. She had to, notice she has the last word, which usually when you have the last word of the story, it means that you're the one who in the end is correct. And she figures out a way, and often the women in the Talmud have to do crazy things to get themselves heard. And thankfully, we don't live in that kind of generation, and we live in a generation where, you know, I can be invited to speak here, and I don't have to shout, and I don't have to do a whole show to get you to listen to me, right? It's a whole different world than it was then. But even then, they had women who really, you know, and Bruria's talked about, and she's very well respected. But again, the general, and that's why I like the Penina's interpretation of it, which is that they were making these generalizations, and I think even in our generation, people make generalizations like Gemara's not for women, and you know, and even women themselves think it's not for them. And what I tried to do, you know, some of you have heard this already over Shabbat, and repeating myself, but some of you haven't heard me speak yet, which is the idea of having a siyum and teaching Daf Yomi to women in general is to break that stigma that Gemara is not for women. Because the Gemara, as you saw today, is full of, you know, discussions of missed opportunities and how you have to make sure to seize the opportunity so you don't miss the chance to make the bracha and pay attention to what you're doing and pay attention to what you eat. And, you know, I don't know if I would recommend everyone go have a cup of asparagus, whatever that drink is every day. We have the recipe, maybe yes. But the Gemara is full of, you know, stories about behavior, human behavior, and all this. And there's so much in it, and there's so much that can affect one's daily life. And just even the learning itself is something that's life-changing for people. And I want to quote you something that a woman wrote to me after the Siyum. This is a woman who, in her own words, she said, "I'm passionate about all women's opportunities in Orthodoxy." And she wrote to me, "I've always said, okay, despite the fact that she's was big prominent of women having all opportunities and her kids, it was important that they learn Gemara. But she said, "I've always said I'm not a Gemara person." Okay, there's probably a lot of people in this room who, you know, Gemara is not for me. I love Tanakh. I never loved Gemara. But now, she said, "I'm obsessed now. Maybe I had to be older. Whatever it is, it's enhancing my day, inspiring me Jewishly, and deepening my appreciation for the intellectual side of Judaism. It literally feels like I'm going back in time and listening to the conversations of a millennium ago," which I guess we are. And I just want to say the amount of people that are learning Gemara since the Siyum is staggering. Thousands upon thousands of women that never opened a Gemara before, or certainly never learned in any formal way, are now studying a book that they were never ever exposed to. And if you go even on Facebook and you can see there's discussions about Daf Yomi every day and people are talking and people are this. And what we're trying to do is at Hadron is to try to provide resources for women, especially women who've never learned Gemara before, that can go and can listen to a shiur spoken by a woman from a, you know, in a different kind of perspective. That will speak more. Again, there's lots of shiurim out there, but I think that a lot of them don't cater to the audience of a beginner who's never necessarily learned Gemara before. And what we're trying to do on our website is collect different commentaries from women and get more women involved in listening and joining groups to connect with other women learning and just to expose women to the wonderful world of studying Talmud. And thank you for coming and for listening and for joining the Shiur. And I hope you find inspiration, start learning Gemara. It could be a once a week class. It could be a Daf Yomi. It doesn't have to be Daf Yomi. Daf Yomi is just a good way to do it because it's very easy. People do it on their way to work. People do it, you know, while they're folding laundry. People do it while they're cooking. People do it in all kinds of scenarios. It's a very easy way now with technology to kind of get a daily dose of learning and gives you food for thought for the day. It grounds you in your day. It gives you kind of a stability in your day to always, every day, know that no matter what happens, you have to learn, right? For me, I find, you know, my life, something could be happening, kids, things, you know, everything, but I know that every day I have to teach. Like, it doesn't matter. No, everything, at a certain point, I have to just put everything aside and just focus on preparing or focus on teaching, and I find it such a refuge because it, you know, otherwise you get involved in everything else and you just say, at a certain point, well,
Now's my time to learn, right? Everything else is blocked out, and I'm just learning, and I'm doing something for myself, and something that enriches me. And I think a lot of people who learn Dafyomi feel that it really gives them a certain grounding in their day. So with that, thank you.
You haven't yet discussed it, I don't think. Woman learning, woman commentaries, everything. Oh, beautiful, all different. It's the ultimate goal that we shouldn't talk like that. You learn a Gemara. Who cares if you're a man or a woman?
Yeah.
Is that where you want to get to?
That's the ultimate goal, yes.
Yeah. Do you see that ever happening in our lifetime?
Do I see that? Yeah, I do think so.
In our lifetime?
I've heard some good stories about people whose mothers learn and then, you know, they say to their mother, like, something comes up about the father, and they're like, oh, I thought only women learned. Like, there's definitely kids who said these comments, you know, that they're used to just seeing
Esther that. Rosenberg told a story in the Amigdalos that apparently her kid, her youngest kid, came to her something about Dafyomi, and said, men also learned Dafyomi.
Exactly.
Yeah,
do you see
it
always being single sex?
Like, no.
Because
not necessarily.
That would be the big area.
One of the struggles I always have with what I'm doing in Hadron is I'm focusing mainly on women because I think that we need to correct the balance. So I'm focusing on, but really my goal is to get to, you know, inspire people to learn in general and not just women. And you know, that's why the shiur is mixed. It's not all about only women. You know, we talked a lot after the Siyum. What's the goal for the next Siyum? Is the next Siyum going to be 10,000 women in an auditorium instead of 3,500 women, and we're going to, you know, take a huge stadium and we're going to fill it with women? Or is the next Siyum going to be that the men's Siyum includes women and that there's women speakers? And to me, that seems like the more natural way and the way that it should be. I just don't know if we're going to get there or when we're going to get there. Yeah.
So you picked a pretty inspired conclusion for a woman, a heroine, I guess you could call her.
Yeah.
But by and large, in the Gemara, the conclusion is that women, you know, uneducated and uninspired and so on. Do you find personally that you struggle with that, and it, I don't know about anger, but is it hard to break through that and say, I'm going to pull something positive?
Yeah, so I always try to pull something positive from it, because I really think that, first of all, I don't think the Gemara was against women. I think the Gemara, I like to quote Alana Krishan, who wrote this book, All the Seas Were Ink. If you haven't read it, it's a great book. It's a memoir of her life through the prism of Dafyomi. And she always quoted as saying this, in the eyes of the Gemara, I'm a man. Because I own land, and I'm intelligent, and I have an opinion, and I'm a player. And I view the women as someone from then that was not me. In other words, those were the women then that were these more, you know, helpless women that needed our help and our protection and couldn't stand up for themselves, and that's not who I am. So if you look at it in that context, you know, I think she just put into words what I always felt, which is, it doesn't bother me because it's describing something that was then, and it was based on the society then. The same way I went into my kids' sixth grade class many years ago, and I said, they want parents to talk about what they do. So I went in, and how did I start? I said, you know, I gave an example that in the late 1800s in America, women, the first woman who was trying to be a lawyer, there were issues. They wouldn't even let women be lawyers because women couldn't own land. That was in America in the late 1800s. You know, it's not, women couldn't vote. I mean, women, you know, so it makes sense that the Gemara viewed them that way, but it's not that that's the way they should be viewed. And I actually, after learning all of the Gemara now, I can safely say that there's many, many cases where the Gemara actually is, I think, very forward-thinking about women and trying to protect women and trying to actually, like, when they talk about, you know, there's some of these stories, of particular, but in general, I think there were a lot of cases where they did try to protect women from husbands who were lying to them and trying to, you know, claim, oh, they're not a virgin and I don't owe them all this money. And you know, when you learn all the stuff in Nashim with divorce, and I think a lot of it was actually, not everything, but there are cases where I always like to highlight those when I'm teaching, you know, and look, they really went to protect the women. So I think there's, people like to quote those things that are in the negative, but they don't quote the other parts. Like Sota is a good example. We were learning Sota. So the Sota is a very strange thing. You're going to take a woman and humiliate her, and it just seems like a crate, and then it's like voodoo a little, you know, if her stomach explodes, and if, you know, then she's guilty. It's not, and it seems this humiliating process. But as we were learning it, and again, when you learn with a group of women, so you're thinking it through the woman's eye, and what's this like? And we started focusing on the details. Well, you know, the only way you become a sota is if the husband, there's all these laws relating to the husband. He has to bring her. He has to actually go with her. They bring two Talmidei Chachamim on the way so that he doesn't accidentally, like, go and sleep with her, because once he accuses her, he can't sleep with her. And yeah, and it makes it a very miserable process for the man also. And we were talking about that. I really think that what's going on is the whole sota is because the man starts getting jealous of his wife, that she's talking to some other man. But the sota, I don't think ever really happened. I don't think anyone ever went through that process. It's not so clear that there's evidence that it ever really happened. And we looked at it and we said, you know what? Probably what's going on there is that they want to prevent women from talking unnecessarily to other men and getting their husbands jealous. And they also want to prevent husbands from getting overly jealous just because your wife's talking to someone, because they basically say to the husband, well, if you're going to get jealous and take you're going to have to do this and do that and the other thing and humiliate yourself besides humiliating her. And who's ever going to do that? So it was a way of kind of preempting, you know, maybe we should avoid this situation and prevent it from ever happening. To do that, it's a message to the man and to the woman. Really.
But you are finding, you're going through all these mental gymnastics at the same time we have to say, sota is there.
Yeah.
And it is a bit disturbing.
Yeah.
I mean, even though we can go through the mental gymnastics, yeah, the same ones we go through with capital punishment.
Right.
Which all the things you have to go through in the Gemara to,
right,
you know, which, you know, is basically impossible.
Right. Right. Well, there also the Gemara says, you know, if they killed one in 70, they were, murderous. So there's things, because I don't look at it as I'm going through gymnastics to get there. I look at it as the Torah was given like Ayin Taharayim, right? The Torah was given with concepts. Sota is a concept. It wasn't meant to be. Ben Sorer and Moreh. Right, these things they say in the Gemara, lo hayav lo nivra. I mean, there's a debate about it. Was it yes or no? But I always like the approach that no, it's just coming to teach you a value. There's values at the core of it. The values are, you know, don't go swimming with other men and don't go being jealous of your wife every time she talks to some other man. You know, that's the underlying value. The fact that it was brought out in this way where the Torah describes all these things you're supposed to do. I mean, even you erase God's name, that's a crazy thing, right? It's kind of telling you, no, we don't ever want to get to this. Right? I think that to me that was the most convincing part, that they take, write God's name and they erase it. We never erase God's name. That means, don't, right, for a man to bring his wife to the Beit HaMikdash and knowing that he's going to have to, they're going to erase God's name, you have to be crazy to actually go through with that. So I really think that it's the concept underlying it, which is a very basic concept, right? Be loyal in your marriage. And Ben Sorer Moreh, listen to your parents. Yeah, these are values, and there are seven ways. You know, this story was a crazy story. It didn't really happen, the story with Yalta. The Gemara is telling you the story in order to get across values and messages. And that's the way I view Gemara in general, that there's underlying messages. It's not about the detail, even though it's very detailed. But you have to zoom out and look at the concept behind it. So that's why I don't look at it like that. You might not be convinced, but that's how I do it.
Not totally, because Yalta's a story, and so does halacha. Right?
Yeah.
So I wouldn't quite.
But again, it's a halacha that I don't think there's any proof that anyone ever went through with it. So it's a halacha, just like Ben Sorer Moreh or Bayim and God, they say never was, but they're right, teaching you concepts.
Mm-hmm.
They say it explicitly, you know? So, yeah. Any other questions? There's some bags if people want. I brought some paraphernalia from the Seum, if anyone's interested. The program from the Seum, there's a bookmark with, there's not enough to go around, but there's enough for a bunch of people to take.
There's still some more fruit and food. Thank you so much.
Thank you.